Last time we looked at just the opening phrase of this most famous of Psalms, "The Lord is my shepherd." David, the author, was a shepherd. But now the sandal is on the other foot. Here now David is not the shepherd, but he is the sheep. And he is describing how the great, unchangeable, faithful God stoops to be a shepherd to his people. And not merely to his people as a collective, as a nation, as a group, but he is my shepherd, says David. And we ask that question of ourselves. Is he my shepherd? It's personal. Is he your shepherd? If he is not your shepherd, then what I'm about to say now is of no use to you at all. He's not your shepherd. He might be a wonderful shepherd, but he's not your shepherd. But listen then, let me tell you about this shepherd. He's my shepherd. Because he's my shepherd, says David, I don't lack. Or as you will probably know it, I shall not want. The good shepherd supplies all my needs. Hear the contentment in the voice of the sheep. I shall not be in want. All I need, I have from God. And maybe you're tempted to say, but hang on, this is David writing. He's going to be the king. Yes, he does end up as king, you're right. But he doesn't begin as king. He wasn't king when he started out. He wasn't king when he was chased all over Judah by Saul, who wanted to kill him. He was barely king when his own son rebelled against him, this great insurrection of Absalom that forced the king to flee for his own life. But David says, I want for nothing. All I need, my shepherd will provide. Not anything I could possibly wish for, rather plenty, enough and to spare, I receive from my shepherd. And I receive that, he says, yes, I receive that in the temporal, in the physical realm, and it is true as well in the spiritual realm. God meets my needs. There are some psalms, and they are prayers, they are cries that God would rescue the psalmist, requests that he would meet the needs. There's no cry, there's no request here. There's only a statement. I shall not want. The psalm speaks then of the comfort, the delight that David received in God. Other psalms that David wrote speak of his deep distress and his trouble. They don't cancel each other out. It's not that one psalm about God's contentment can be balanced against one cry of distress and the two would somehow neutralize each other in a wonderful explosion and then we can start from scratch. It is not that they cancel each other out. Rather, they complement each other. In all the grief and sorrow and terror and dismay and confusion that David felt and expressed in the Psalms, in all of those, as he looks away from himself and looks to and his circumstances, and as he looks towards God, he sees what? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. And if I'm content for now, spiritually and physically, I'm fed by the Lord, I have no wants, then I can be confident for the future. Every need supplied. I can rely on him. Well, that's how it is for the shepherd's sheep. For the Lord's sheep, they don't want. Now, what the rest of the psalm does is it takes particular examples of that truth. The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. If you're going to forget everything else I say, remember that bit. That's the great theme. But let's see some of the features of his shepherding. Some of the ways in which this works out. The first one we'll look at then is in verse 2. And we discover that the shepherd gives rest. The shepherd gives rest. Here's a flock. It's the heat of the day. They have walked to find grazing and to find water. It's hot. It's been hard. The sheep are thirsty. But the shepherd knows. And the shepherd cares. And he has brought them to this lovely, cool, shaded pasture by the edge of the stream. And there is the trees grow along the banks, and in this cooler place, this is where they can rest. For what it's worth, I don't think the emphasis here in pasture is about the feeding. I think the feeding comes up in verse 5, and come back next week and you can find out why I think that. But this is about rest. The good shepherd provides rest. And we live, don't we, in an age when nobody seems to get enough rest. Isn't that true? When everyone's frazzled and overworked and busy and stressed and run out of time. There aren't enough hours in the day. I'm just so busy. And to that world, and to you who run around like headless chickens in it, Jesus offers rest. Do you know what the dying words of the Buddha were? I don't suppose you do. Let me tell you what the dying words of the Buddha are. Work hard to gain your own salvation. It's recorded. Those are the last words of the Buddha. The dying words of the Buddha. Work hard to gain your own salvation. And there are untold millions around the world, and they have bought into that. And they're chasing, and they're racing, and they're working, and they strive without ceasing. You know what Jesus' dying words are? It is finished. Done. Nothing more to do, nothing more to pay. Done. And so Jesus says, come and rest. And Jesus says, come unto me, you are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest. And so often as God's people, as Christians, we struggle and we fight and we wear ourselves out and we chase around and we can't let go, and we forget this, that Jesus promises rest. And you could go away and you could read it. I would encourage you to. Hebrews in chapter 4 is all about the fact that Jesus provides better rest for people than Moses and Joshua ever could. And in Hebrews 4 and 10 it says, anyone who enters God's rest rests from his own work. You see, you can't contribute anything to your salvation. You can't work hard enough to earn your salvation. It's done. It's finished. Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. What the shepherd does is he takes his sheep and what? Verse 2, he makes them lie down in green pastures. Some of you this evening need to be reminded of that. The shepherd says, come and rest. It's done. It's finished. Stop striving. The shepherd gives rest. Look at verse 3. The next thing the shepherd gives is restoration. He gives rest, he gives restoration. He restores, or depending on your translation, he refreshes my soul. If you imagine a nurse working on a hospital ward, of all the patients on her ward, which one does she particularly pay attention to? Not the noisiest one who's shouting in the middle of the night. Who is it? Isn't it the frailest one, the sickest one? Think of a teacher. They're in the class. Which pupil is the teacher perhaps particularly aware of? Yeah, I know, teachers, you've got a name for him. You can picture him. But it's the one who is likely to struggle or to disrupt or to wander off. which sheep does the shepherd particularly have to give his love and attention to? It is the one who is struggling or is sick or is prone to wander off. Because what the shepherd does is restore the soul, or refresh the soul, I think some translations have. Well, I see that in two ways. Firstly, there are those who need to be restored because they're sick. And they need that the shepherd would very gently and tenderly pick them up, bind up their wounds, treat their sickness. He would restore them. There are those who need to be restored because what they are doing is wandering off. You remember that Jesus tells the parable, doesn't he, of the shepherd who leaves, 99 sheep in the field and makes sure they're safe, but then goes off to look for the sheep that's wandered off. And when he finds it, he comes home with it on his shoulders. Rejoice with me. I found the one that wandered off. And God delights to restore his sheep, to bring them back when they've wandered off. The shepherd does that. He pursues the sheep that have gone away because he cares for them, because he loves them. Sometimes the same sheep does it again and again and again. In any flock you get that one sheep, don't you? But the shepherd does that. Restores the sheep that wanders off. You can think of David. David himself. The times that he strayed, wandered off. We've looked at David's early life, haven't we, over the last number of months. And we've seen times when he was wandering off and yet God would gently restore him. We even saw that this morning, didn't we? In the passage. And as you know, David, later in David's life, he would do it again. In what way does the shepherd refresh or restore the sheep? By what means does the shepherd do this? Psalm 19, speaking about God's word. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul, reviving the soul, refreshing the soul. It's the same word that's used here. It's the law of the Lord. It's God's word, the Bible, that is the means he uses in restoring his sheep, feeding and restoring and healing and mending those who are broken and bringing back those who are wandered off. But notice this, the Bible itself on its own isn't able to do this. It needs that the shepherd would do it. Let me read to you some words from Spurgeon, Charles Spurgeon, and his commentary on this. When the soul grows sorrowful, he revives it. When it is sinful, he sanctifies it. And when it is weak, he strengthens it. He does it. His ministers could not do it if he did not. His word would not avail by itself. He restoreth my soul. And he goes on to say this. Are any of us low in grace? Do we feel that our spirituality is at its lowest ebb? You ever experienced that? That sense of being at a low ebb, being cold and feeling far from God. It is he who turns the ebb into the flood can soon restore our soul. Pray to him then for the blessing. And he says, pray this, restore thou me, thou shepherd of my soul. Shepherd, restore me. Well, he gives rest, the shepherd does. He gives restoration. Look at verse 3. Hey, he gives guidance. Imagine for a moment a sheep that's lost, that's wandered off, lacking direction, prone to wander into all sorts of trouble and danger. Well, men and women can be like that, can't they? Lacking direction, constantly seeking answers, constantly trying to find the solution. Whether it's turning to this magazine or asking this person or going to that, I don't know, that newspaper columnist or this TV program or whatever, they're looking for the answer, looking for the solution, they're looking for guidance. But here is the shepherd. He guides his sheep. But you know what, as Christians, those who say that the Lord is our shepherd, sometimes we wind ourselves up over this. How will I know what God's will is for my life? Well, look, here's the comfort then in this statement about our shepherd. It's not about how you would know what he wants you to do. It's that what? He guides me. So don't fret so much about finding out what his will is. It's just walk closely with him. Suppose you wanted to go and visit someone in Pillowell. Maybe you had a friend in Pillowell. Anyone? I don't want to upset anyone from Pillowell before we go any further. There you go. I've never been to Pillowell. Now, you could try giving me directions to Pillowell. I wouldn't get there. So what would you do? You'd say, no, don't worry about that. Don't worry. You follow me. I'll drive there. You drive behind me. Follow me. And down all the twists and turns, all the little roads through the forest, each junction, I don't have to know where I'm going. I have to know that you know where you're going, and that I follow you. And this is what, as Christians, we are being called to. This is what sheep do with the shepherd. It's not that they need to know where they're going, it's that they need to follow the shepherd. Notice, too, that as well as guiding me, what a great comfort that is. What a reassurance. You don't have to puzzle it out. It's not that there's some mysterious holy guessing game you have to get to the bottom of. You walk with the shepherd, he'll guide you. But look, he guides me, we're told, in paths of righteousness. In the right paths. And so, the way he leads us, the way we go as we follow him, will match up with what he's revealed as being righteous, as being upright, as being good. You can't claim that God is leading you in anything if it goes against what he says in his word. Why? Because he guides me in the right path. Now, just pause for a minute. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this shepherd good? Isn't he? Why? Maybe you wonder this. Why would he do this? Why would he do this? Well, he does it for me. Yes, he does it for you. Well, what is it about you? Why does he do it for you? Is it because you're particularly clever? Is it because you're particularly successful? Is it because you're very beautiful, ladies? Or handsome, gentlemen? Is that why he does this for you? Oh, no, you say it's because I miss sheep. True. But hang on, that takes us back a minute, doesn't it? To the first question, why would he do this? Why would he do this to you? Why would he have you as his sheep? Why would he lead you and refresh you and give you rest? Well, look why, at the end of verse 3. For his name's sake. In what way does he shepherd you? He shepherds you according to his name. All that his name represents. As he guides you, it's in keeping with his holiness, in keeping with his faithfulness, in keeping with his love, his wisdom, everything that he's revealed about himself. Well, that'll be the way in which he shepherds you. You see, his care for you is for his name's sake. It's care, don't misunderstand me, not for you, but for your sake and your sake. It's for his sake. Because it brings glory to himself, because he is concerned about his name. Now, when I say that, our kind of human reaction is to think, well, that's pride on his part, isn't it? Because we know what pride is. And we know what it is to wrongly boast in our own abilities or to try and present a false image of ourselves. So don't view it that way. Think of it like this. Think of a mother. And she's sending off her little one to school. It's school photo day. We had school photos done last week. And so what does the mother do for the child as he goes out to have the school photo done? She makes sure that the trousers he's wearing are the cleanest of the trousers he has. They're the best ones. They're the ones that have hardly got any holes in the knees. And she makes sure that his shirt is nicely ironed and the jumper is clean. She brushes his hair, although she is pretty certain as soon as he gets through the door he's going to do this with it. She shines his shoes, although he'll wander through the mud on the way to school. But she does that, doesn't she? It is evidence of her love, her care. It is for her name's sake. It is so that he would be seen as her child that she loves and cares for and nourishes and nurtures. And the shepherd, well, oh, he shepherds you, he guides you, he restores you, he rests you. What? For his name's sake. Then we come to verse 4. And as well as rest and restoration and guidance, we're going to see here that the shepherd gives reassurance and protection. The first few verses have been, well, it's been idyllic, hasn't it? There we are lying down in green pastures, oh, strolling beside quiet waters, having our souls restored and being guided in these lovely paths. It's been delightful, peaceful, joyful. But sometimes life isn't like that, is it? Is it? But even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, when I walk in deepest darkness, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You see, that is the places that we also walk, as well as a peaceful, joyful, delightful places. So much of our human experience is then in that dark valley, isn't it? Now that includes the darkness of death. I think that's being pointed to here. But I think it goes further than that as well. You might be a long way away from death, but you can know such sorrow. There are people, aren't they? A long way from death, and yet knowing such sorrow and hardship, a weary in their soul, really knowing that shadow. To the point where sometimes people long for death, even though it's far away from them. And all of us, at some point, will come to this valley of the shadow of death. If you haven't known great darkness and great difficulty yet, wonderful. But you will. And all of us, at some point, will come face to face with death, won't we? Now, notice, the Lord is my shepherd. He makes me, he leads me, he restores me, he guides me. Notice what changes when we come to verse 4. So far the sheep has been saying he about the shepherd. Now he says you to the shepherd. It is intensely personal. The shepherd drawing nearer in the very darkest moments. The shepherd particularly close to his sheep as they go into this valley of the shadow of death. And death is scary, isn't it? We recoil from it. There is something about it that is terrible to us. And that's right. There's something in us that cries out against death because we know it's not right. Death is an intruder in the world that God has created. It is the result of our sin, not his design. And so it is fearful to us. But let me just draw your attention to two things so we can see this. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it is a shadow. Shadows can be scary. Maybe you can imagine a child and there's some, they're distressed in the night. You've put them to bed and they're crying and you go, what is it? Well, there's something making a shadow on the wall. Shadows can seem scary. There's nothing in them. There's nothing to it. A shadow has no power to hurt us. It is the shadow of death. There is nothing substantial in it. As Matthew Henry says in his commentary, the shadow of a serpent will not sting, nor the shadow of a sword kill. Jesus has taken the sting out of death, taken the victory from the grave. It is, we say, don't we, something is a shadow of its former self. Death is a shadow of its former self. So firstly, see this, it's a shadow. But secondly, notice this, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, when I walk through it, now what a comfort this is. We go through it. We will all go through it. But it's not our stopping place. It's not our final destination. For the sheep of God, it's the valley that they pass through on their way to Him. They don't remain there. They pass through it. And you can picture David, you can picture him contemplating, entering into this valley of the shadow of death, contemplating death itself. And he pictures himself walking into that grim place. And he catches, as it were, at the corner of his eye, no, he's not alone. He has no need to fear. Why? Because the shepherd is with him. What's this rod and staff that are to comfort him? The rod, it's tucked in his belt. It's a kind of heavy club or cudgel. It's to defend from predators, from enemies. What's the staff? The shepherd holds it in his hand. It's the shepherd's crook. It's with, he rounds up the sheep. He restrains them as they might dart off into danger. He guides them and steers them. And he sees the rod and the staff, and David realizes he's got nothing to fear. But the shepherd has defeated his enemies of fear, guilt, hell. And the shepherd will steer him safely through. Look, David didn't get this. David could never see this far, but understand this. What David couldn't grasp. The good shepherd has gone through death before you. There is nothing there to catch him by surprise. He has gone ahead. He has taken away its power. He has left it just a shadow of itself. Don't be afraid. He will walk with you in it and through it. Remember the words that Jesus speaks to his disciples. It's in John 14, very well known words. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. How will you get there? How will you get through the valley to that place? How will you get through this dreadful, fearsome valley in order to reach that wonderful place? It's all very well you preparing a place for me, Jesus, but I can't get there. Oh, and says Jesus, look, if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. Do you see that? The shepherd gone on ahead, but not leaving you to your own devices. He's gone through, he's checked it out, he knows the way. I'll come, and I'll take you to be with me, so that where I am, you may be also. Or a shepherd. He rests his sheep and he restores them and he guides them and he reassures and guards them and protects them even through death. But hold on. If you want to face death with the same peace that David has, you have to have the same shepherd. David said, he's my shepherd. Is he your shepherd? This great comfort, this great hope, this great promise is only true for the sheep who belong to the shepherd. Here in this field, you can see these sheep, they're lying down, they're resting, they're delighting in the care that the shepherd has them. Over here on this hill, look, whose sheep is that? I don't know. And this shepherd, his flock is safe. The wolves that prowl won't dare come close when this shepherd is near. These sheep have been fed. They've been cared for. The scabby bits have been cut off their tails so the maggots can't bore into them. They've been dipped. The shepherd knows them. And he's looking after them and he's guiding them. This sheep's stuffed. He's got no benefit from however good that shepherd is there. He's on his own. He's wandered off. He has no security. He needs to be in the shepherd's flock. It's all very well how wonderful this shepherd is. If you're not in his flock, you're lost. But Jesus says this. He says, I've got other sheep. They're not from this flock. But I'm going to bring them into my pen. Are you his? Are you in his flock? Are you in his pen? You say, well, I hope I am. Some of you say, I know I am. He's my shepherd. But some of you say, maybe I'd like to be. Is that enough? As you contemplate the valley of the shadow enough, is a kind of vague, I'd like to be. Is that enough? No. So how can I become his sheep? How can I know that I'm in his flock? Well, I want you to imagine that there's a shepherd. And he's bought himself a new sheep. He's got the receipt and everything. He's bought this new sheep. But the sheep is suspicious. The sheep, like the old shepherd, see? The sheep had been with the old shepherd since he were a lamb. The sheep only ever knew that shepherd. And the new shepherd comes along and yes, the price has been paid. Yes, he's got the receipt. Yes, he's his sheep, but the old sheep won't have it, will he? He keeps wandering off. He keeps trying to find his way back. Yeah, but then imagine the winter comes and the snow's lying on the ground and the food is scarce and all the water's frozen. And the wolves have come down from the mountains because there's no food. Now, at that point, the daft old stubborn sheep realizes that there is only one who can shepherd him. And at that point, what does he do? He goes and he joins himself to the shepherd. He forgives up on himself. He doesn't think in his stupid, sheepish way that he can somehow carry on his own. He gives up the hope that the old shepherd is ever going to come back for him. What does he do? He comes to the new shepherd and he says, well, he doesn't say, he bleats at him, I suppose. You are my shepherd. I am your sheep. If you want peace like David's peace, you need faith like David's faith. You have to recognize that you are lost. You have to recognize that you desperately need a shepherd. You have to recognize that only God is able to shepherd you properly. And you have to then turn to him. And you have to give up relying on yourself that somehow, as a sheep, you can make it on your own in the world. And give up hoping that any other shepherd could ever take care of you like this one. And you have to cry to him that he would shepherd you. That is it. He will. He is the good shepherd. He's already purchased you. You didn't know? He has purchased you at great cost. Bought you with his own blood. He has the receipt. Well, the scars at any rate to prove it. What good shepherd would ignore the desperate need and the pitiful bleating of his own sheep that he'd purchased at great cost? Well, he wouldn't, would he? The shepherd will take up his sheep. Of course he will. That's what it is to be a Christian. It's to say, I can't make it on my own. As a sheep. To say there is no one else who will shepherd me. And to say, Jesus, gentle Saviour, lead me. Shepherd me. Feed me. Rest me. Restore me. Guide me. Guard me. Bring me safely home. Amen.